I'm Jan McCarthy, and you are here with Entrepreneurial Voice, and we are talking about the life of an entrepreneur. This is Skid Row Studios. We are here every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we are Real Radio on the Internet. So welcome, everyone. I'm excited today to introduce to you Megan, who is of Whorehouse Studios. And welcome, Megan. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
So I think your story is so interesting, and I'm really fascinated by what you do because you've entered a field that not too many women have entered when it comes to thinking about entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more about your background and what led this to this path that you have selected. Selected you.
Maybe. Could be. Well, I am a welder, and I make furniture and design furniture. And my background was definitely nothing related to this. I moved to New York City when I was 18, and I started modeling pretty quickly after I was there and pretty much made my living in that. And then moved out to Los Angeles to further that and do some more acting and things like that. So I was very immersed in that world. And I met a boy.
And that happens sometimes.
Yeah. And anyway, we were together for a while, and I kind of, gave some things in my life up to start to settle down a bit. And then it ended up not working out. And I found myself in a very large house with 4 bedrooms and 4 bathrooms out in the middle of nowhere, ready to have kids, and then didn't want it, and it wasn't going to work. So anyway, basically, I laugh and I say that I kind of got into welding because I was angry. I needed to do something that made me feel a bit of a badass again. And I've always been very interested in home design. And so it really just started as a bit of a hobby. I was feeling a little bit reckless, to be quite honest. I just wandered into a kind of sketchy area of the valley and twirled my hair a little bit and was like, does anyone want to teach me to weld? And it honestly turned out to be one of the best decisions I've ever made, because the guys that I met at that shop, they kind of, after a couple days of them being like, yeah, let's see how long this girl holds out, when I started coming back, they really kind of taught me everything that I knew. And so I was in a shop with probably about a dozen guys who were it was a very trade-oriented area that, there was an auto mechanic and people who made security gates and things like that. And so I just started learning how to weld and was amazed by the salvage material. I was salvaging it. The material they were throwing away. And so I started building things out of that. And then also, in kind of a serendipitous thing, is the shop next to where I was working was a marble fabrication place. And as well, they were throwing these pieces away that were so beautiful. And I mean, coffee table size, and just I couldn't believe it. And so, I started taking those and mixing it with the metal and making coffee tables and different pieces of furniture. And it was funny because all the guys were watching me kind of like play around with their trash, and they literally were like, no one's going to buy this shit from here. But I was just making it for friends. And then they kind of encouraged me to put some things online. I did. And maybe I just have self-esteem issues or priced myself too low. But I sold out of everything in about 24 hours. And then it just kind of kept going from that point. And now I'm in a space in downtown LA. This is probably about a year and a half later, going on 2 years. It's a 7,000 square foot warehouse that I share with 2 other companies. And great thing going, and now my clients are mainly, some residential people, but a lot of artists and designers and interior designers, architects, things like that
are seeking you out. Mm-hmm. So the guys that you first learned from, are those the same partners that you're with now?
No.
Okay.
All right. No, they were. It was funny. Those guys were great for me, and they were kind of like father figures in a lot of ways. I go and like I said, it was kind of a bad time in my life, so it was a really good time to just immerse myself in this. And I would go days at a time where I realized I'd be in a shop in the middle of the valley with 12 men. I'd speak nothing but broken Spanglish all day and be like, no one knows where you are. Every once in a while, I'm still in touch with some of them, but it was also very kind of transient space.
Yeah.
And so they've kind of all moved on too. And
but welding, a lot of people say, well, I've always loved, for more traditional kind of businesses that you may get involved in, mm-hmm. Even though you loved home design, most people who love home design don't necessarily go into welding. So have you just always enjoyed working with your hands? Have you, where did that fascination for welding come from? Because that's really not traditional. And I don't know that I would even think about it. That never, although I have a great interest in design, it never occurred to me that maybe I could weld something. So I'm curious where that started. And because this is a show about entrepreneurs and how they get started, mm-hmm. I think what's really great is that you tapped into something really outside the box. And you are an out-of-the-box thinker because I've seen some of the many things that you've designed, and they're stunning and practical at the same time.
It's a nice thing to say.
And useful. Well, it is. I love your work, and we'll make sure that we give your website so our listeners can go and check that out. And let me just also mention that if anyone wants to call in, they can at 1-800-893-9562 if you have a question for myself or Megan. But still, I mean, that's just not where you normally people go with that. So did you know someone who had welded before? Or
no,
how did you tap into that?
I think I just have, like, control issues, like self-sufficiency issues. I mean, just based on my background, my childhood, and as well finding myself out of a relationship where I had felt very out of control of things. And then, again, the fact that I liked home design and I'd been in this house that we were working on and I was doing a lot of the things. I was making light fixtures and I was relying on found objects, okay. which was really fun, but quite limiting also. You know, if you're trying to make a shelf out of, you know, I mean, it's kind of getting a little over now, but there was that whole thing for a while where people were doing shelves out of plumbing parts and things like that, but you're mm-hmm. very restricted to the pieces that you can buy that are already manufactured. And it was just always in the back of my head that, you know, if I can weld, you can do anything. You can build yourself a car, you can build yourself a house. And so I think it was kind of somewhat aesthetic, and also the look of raw steel was also very much my aesthetic at the time too. So all of those things kind of came together, and it was like, yes, I can completely take care of myself. It wasn't going through my head this way, but it was definitely, you know, I can take care of myself if I can do this. I can, you know, support myself and build things. And so, yeah.
I like the connection that you brought with that too, because it probably was very empowering.
It was. I mean, just in that you can, as I said, literally build anything, and down to the most basic things, which is shelter if you need it, as well as things that make your life beautiful.
Well, that's really fascinating. And I love that, first of all, you had this idea. You had this, like, aha moment. I'd love to to build things. I'd love to weld. That would be really cool. So for a lot of people thinking, oh, I would really like to do that, you know, a lot of times it just stops right there. So you showed tremendous courage and fortitude and determination to go out and start seeking, where could I find out how to do this? Because there's not, again, it's not just that typical thing that you do to say, oh, I'd like to do this, and I can go sign up for this class at the community college or USC or online or whatever, and take that. And even then, getting the knowledge, that was really quite brilliant, that you went out looking for welders and then went in and just said, hey, can you teach me how to do this?
You know, I mean, really? I'll take it. But, you know, I mean, it never really, I think when you're on that end of it, it never really feels that way. I was in a place in my life where I really had to make some major decisions for, you know, kind of my survival, both emotionally and, you know, practically. And so, you know, yeah, I think a lot of times when people come up with an idea and then kind of flake on it, it's because they have the luxury of something else. Mm-hmm. And I mean, unfortunately or fortunately, I mean, I tend to look at it more the latter now. I didn't really have anything else to do but make some serious decisions in my life. And so, I don't know. Thank you for saying that.
But you still didn't take the easy way out, though, because could have gone and done other things, too.
Maybe. But, you know, I was definitely, I mean, I was, you know, I was in my 30s. I had been a model my whole life. It's not something you turn back to that easily, particularly not in LA. Maybe if I'd been in New York. You know, I had dropped out of college, actually, to model. And so, you know, it was kind of, it was it was a scary decision because it didn't really feel like I had a ton to fall back on. And maybe that's what made me or allowed me to kind of think outside the box a little bit, which is kind of, you know, anything's on the table right now.
So. Well, that's another thing, too, that entrepreneurs recognize, too, I think, and is that a lot of times when you're at that really low place, like you'll hear people say, the best thing that ever happened to me is I got fired,
right,
or something along those lines, because it causes you, it forces you to stop and think of something different, mm-hmm. and to be able to, there's a saying, and I can't remember what it is, but and maybe you do, about diamonds, you know, diamonds out of the rubble or
something like that, yeah.
Something like that,
lemons, you know. Lemonades, all those, yeah.
Yeah. So, but still, it did take courage for you to start walking into these welding shops saying, hey, will you teach me how to weld? And so I hope that you'll own that, because not everybody would have done that. They would have looked for perhaps an easier route. And entrepreneurship is not easy, as we all know.
So, yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
So you went in and you had this idea. You thought about creating these beautiful things, and you loved the idea that you could, if you welded, you could really create anything and make these beautiful objects, which you do, mm-hmm. and you learned the trade, and then what caused you to break from, when you started your website, did you do it from when you were working with the other guys, or did you do it when you went into the company that you're with now?
Yeah, no, I did that before I met these guys. In fact, I probably that whole, you know, forming a website and kind of marketing, you know, it was fun to be able to take the knowledge that I'd had of, you know, say a photo shoot, which is like, I know what I'd look like when I'd go into a photo shoot in the morning with no makeup on, and then I'd see the finished product. So it was really fun to be able to take kind of the magic of that and apply it to furniture. I mean, not to say that my furniture looks terrible with that.
Well, you know, in its raw form, it's not anything yet,
yeah,
you know?
So. But to be able to style photos and kind of create an aesthetic, a visual aesthetic, and then translate that into a website was really, really fun, because that was one of the things I felt like, oh, I was able to tap on my previous experience for that. And that aesthetic and that the website that I created and using my story in it and all of that is what I feel like kind of attracted, you know, the people who are now in my life into my life. You know, people started to see me as an artist and, oh, you should meet this person. It kind of, you know, went in that direction. So, but yeah, that was something I did pretty early on.
Okay, great. And the name of your website is whorehouse.com.
Whorehousestudios.com.
Whorehousestudios.com. Yeah. But it's WH parentheses or.
Well, the website itself is easy. You can just go to whorehousestudios.com, spell it house, okay. Or HAUS, which is how typically, right. I spell, but it'll all take you the same place. But yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, but then the name of my company is, if you look visually at the logo, the WH is in parentheses, and then ORE. And then house, HAUS, which I guess was probably just because it looked cooler.
It does. It all looks very cool. So how did you come up with your name?
That's obviously the thing people ask me the most. And it's kind of a fun story. You know, I was brainstorming with a friend of, you know, some of the different names that I could come up with. And ORE is one of the things that came to mind. And he was a photographer, and I was helping him with something, and we were shooting. I remember we were in the penthouse of the W Hotel, and literally this is less than 24 hours after we just come up with this brilliant name that I was going to name my company, OR. And we walk out onto the penthouse, and there's all these like beautiful steel planters with the word OR etched all in them, which is clearly someone else's brand. So that was taken. I did a little research, and he kind of joked. It was like, you should call it OR House. And I looked, and a man had actually taken that. And then at that point, I thought, well, you know what? Guy's got that. I think I'm entitled. But I mean, it was primarily focused around the word OR, which, you know, it's funny how the meaning of that has expanded so much as the company's grown, which is, I mean, the definition is to find something valuable from other matter, and that tends to be associated with metal. So obviously it was descriptive of the material that I was using, but it kind of went a step further, which is I was working a lot in salvage material, so finding value in what other people were considering garbage. Not to get too like metaphysical about it, but my life was a shit show, and so to like pull some value out of that, you know, that was really rewarding as well. So it's kind of primarily focused around that word. And then, you know, the horror part of it, adding the WH, I just feel like, you know, women, the name, they love it or hate it. But for me, it added a femininity to it, but like a badass femininity to it,
yeah.
Which is kind of why I was in it to begin with. So, yeah.
I love it. I think it, but I also think, and this is important to know for mm-hmm. being an entrepreneur, is coming up with a name that people can remember. Mm-hmm. And they do. They clearly remember this is an unusual name, mm-hmm. And so it helps them to remember. And then just your story is so important. And that's true for everybody when they are thinking about being an entrepreneur or even while they're in it, knowing, being able to communicate your story and telling your story, because we all want to know what's kind of behind that brand. And, mm-hmm. and so I love that you have a name that people can remember and that, you know, whether it gives them a chuckle or even if it's bad press, which I can imagine that it would be, it's just so compelling.
Yeah, thank you. You know? Yeah, I mean, it's not without its challenges. Trying to get the bank to, like, print the word whore on the checks or, like, your credit card, you know, or trying to set up shipping accounts when they want to know exactly what you're shipping. but the people don't forget.
Yes, or these are adult toys, right? Yeah. No, I love it. I think it's just fascinating and very, very creative. And the fact that you're an artist with that, I mean, it's very artistic. And so I love that you combined both what you're doing with your name, with coming up with a very creative, artistic name, too.
Thank you.
So not everybody knows exactly what to do when they become an entrepreneur. I mean, there's mm-hmm. so many questions and there's so many challenges about how do I get started and should I have a website and mm-hmm. and do I need a bank account and all of those things. How did you know to do these things?
That's a good question, because I still feel like I'm in the thick of it. And I feel like as an entrepreneur, you always kind of feel like you're trying to keep your head above water.
Yeah.
Trying water. Don't get me wrong, because I think that everything about being an entrepreneur is motivation and dedication and just work and time and energy. Mm-hmm. But strangely enough, I feel like in my case, kind of like surrendering was actually one of the easiest things or the best way to do it, which is I was so in over my head. I just was kind of like, I'll take this and now I need to do this. So I think that a lot of times people can get very caught up in the minutiae of planning. And I know a lot of people who have amazing ideas, but they don't feel like they can execute them until they're perfect.
Exactly.
You know, the website has to be exactly this, or as soon as this looks like this, it'll be ready to go. And, I don't think it's a good idea to be reckless about things. But on the other hand, I think sometimes it's more important just to like jump and deal with the consequences later. And so I feel like a lot of the decisions I made in the beginning were that, you know, it's like you start a website and oh, now you have to sell things. So now you have to go to the bank and apply for a merchant account and then that whole education. So I feel like my education was really like in the trenches and basically just out of necessity based on what's the next step. And then, you know, I've always been pretty resourceful. And so just, you know, educating yourself on that, whether it's Googling, whether it's asking the right people, you know, but so that is a form of work, but I guess taking it kind of a step at a time and doing that. And really now, particularly that I'm in the atmosphere that I'm in, which is, as I mentioned, when I first started, it was very trade oriented. Now I feel like I'm in a great mix of working with people who are artists, but also great business people as well. And so utilizing the resources that you have around you, mm-hmm. you know, in Los Angeles, it's really interesting because it's such an area dominated by the entertainment industry.
Right.
I feel like people are very closed off. You meet people at parties and it's like someone comes up to you and like, oh, what do you do? And you can just feel this desperation. Everyone wants a job or wants to know who you know somehow out of that.
Right.
But once I moved out of that venue, it was amazing. Everyone's so forthcoming with their knowledge and like generous, and they want to help and they want you to do well. And they're flattered when you ask them about, you know, their knowledge and their expertise. And so that's been a really, really rewarding part of it, to be able to actually get some of it, which is kind of ironic in this thing that was supposed to be my like self-sufficiency opus, actually having to like kind of rely on other people. And, you know, in your experience, you're two steps ahead in this area. What have you done? And kind of pooling in that knowledge too. So, yeah.
Well, that's another key component to successful entrepreneurship is being able to ask for help when mm-hmm. you need it.
Yeah.
Recognizing what others have to offer, being open and generous, not only with what you know, but mm-hmm. And you're that kind of person too, that people would, because you're very authentic, and that's also very important in entrepreneurship as well. But, you know, people want to help. You're right. They absolutely do. And that's something that is sometimes, I think, misunderstood, mm-hmm. that, you know, people really want to help you.
Yeah.
And it's not about a competition kind of thing. People like to share their knowledge,
yeah,
and they like to help. Ultimately, I think they like to help, mm-hmm. you know, so,
yeah.
So that's great that you were in that position of being open to receiving and going out and just doing. And yes, there's so much to be said, and a lot of people will insist that you have to have a full business plan, you know. And if you're going to a bank and you're really looking for a lot of money, then they're obviously going to require that, or you're looking for investors and things, they're obviously going to require something when you're first starting out. But a lot of people, especially a lot of very successful people, will tell you that if they had gone through all of that, they would have never started their business. And if you had really known some
of the, good, I didn't know how scary this was going
to be. Some of the challenges that you might have to face going forward, you might not have continued to go forward. So ignorance is bliss sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
And
educated ignorance, I think. But yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's great. And I love that you just jumped in all the way and moved forward. And since I'm a lucky recipient of some of your pieces, then I'm especially fortunate that you did move forward. But one of the sayings I like to say is done is better than perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and really that's what it's all about, because you're never going to achieve that ultimate perfection. And I don't care how much you research and put together a business plan. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be things that change from what you initially thought, because once you get into the trenches, all things can change.
Right. And
it can be different. So just sort of having a little bit of a vision going forward is great, but not getting too caught up in everything is something to remember.
Right.
So you're working with all these guys. Mm-hmm. You've learned how to weld. Mm-hmm. I assume you had a few mishaps along the way, like a burn here, burn
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
When did you know, when was that moment that you knew it's time for me to take that next leap forward and go and try and position myself somewhere differently? When did you know that it's time to go? To where you found the partners that you have now?
Yeah, I mean, I feel very fortunate in that I feel like that was kind of a very organic situation, in that, you know, it was a situation like, oh, you should meet this person, and it's really like it kind of all came together at the same time. But I was definitely ready, because I think I was mainly hitting a wall with what I found was the aesthetic difference, which was, you know, I'd started to get the technical skills down from the people that I was working with, which again is completely invaluable, because you have to have a foundation before you can be creative in any way. But it was really that kind of itch of like, okay, now I want to make art, and now I need to, you know, like I need someone with a little bit more of a similar vision to what I have. And so, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but it was kind of that need to do it. And it was a great, you know, situation where it was one of these things where like my friend is like, all right, I think it's time you start dating, so I'm going to introduce you to this guy, and he turned out to be an actor. I'm like, I will never date another actor. You know, but he happened to introduce me to this person, and it just like kind of kept going, and you know, I just ended up in an amazing group of people who I really think are like my family now. We got a great thing going. And you know, when I say similar aesthetic, like, don't get me wrong, our styles are all kind of all over the place, but just being with artists and people who are appreciating a piece for something more than just the practicality of it. I mean, it's interesting though also how that's kind of come full circle, and I've learned to really, really appreciate the beauty of like functionality and things that just work well and that are kind of tried and tested, but still to be able to appreciate it in a more artistic sense.
Well, as a group, there's all kinds of things that are being done, and we can say the name of the group if
you want. Yeah, no, I work with two other companies. One is Weston Mitchell Design Group, and then Neptune Glassworks. So the Weston Mitchell Design Group is two guys own it, and they also do a lot of steel work, but they work with a lot of wood and reclaimed wood. And they have, our shop's getting really full. They've probably got like 9 employees now, and they're doing a lot of like restaurant build outs and things like that. And then Yuri is a glass blower. He's the one that I met first, who introduced me to the other guys in the shop. And he's kind of like the wizard of the shop. He's great. He had an engineering background, and then before he graduated, decided he didn't want to do that and went back to school for fine art. And so he's been a glassblower, and, you know, he makes things look very easy, but he does that only because he's had 20 years of training under his belt. So he focuses a lot on lighting, but does everything too, so...
And then you've got your place in the shop too, where you do your welding, and mm-hmm. and everybody seems to work really well together. Mm-hmm. And again, that's something that I like to bring up too, mm-hmm. Is whether it's partners. I don't know if you all are specific partners or you just all are an incredible team. Mm-hmm. Picking the right people to be on that team mm-hmm. is critical yeah. if you're going to be working with others mm-hmm. and recognizing that you all have different strengths.
Yeah.
Like you said with Yuri, he's kind of the wizard. Recognizing that you all have different strengths that you can bring to the table mm-hmm. to make this whole collective work.
Right.
And you're all artists in your own right. Mm-hmm. You know, so mm-hmm. so that's critical too.
Yeah, no, that's been the really fun part about it, to see like how all of our styles have kind of changed and adjusted a little bit, and what we've learned. You know, obviously Yuri is the first person I go to when I have a math question. Yuri's the first person I go to for a math question. he'll laugh. I always have like numbers written all over my hand. They call it model math because I'm like obvious. Wes is probably the best for like just building how something needs to be built structurally. Preston is amazing on the computer. He has an architecture background, and so he's given me a huge amount of knowledge in that regard, and also business sense too, you know, how to price things out and quote and stuff like that. And, you know, I like to think that I've kind of brought a little bit of a feminine touch to the shop, you know, which, I mean, can be anything from like, do you like this color? But, you know, I've definitely seen a softening in their aesthetic a little bit. Their things sometimes are very heavy and very industrial, which I actually think is lovely. And I think there's a huge market for it, too.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing them start to incorporate other materials, and they've started to use some marble and things like that. I've started to use, you know, a bit of glass. And so it's fun to see how that evolves and how generous everyone is with their information.
Yeah.
And that, yeah.
Yeah. So do you sometimes as an artist myself, whenever I start painting a picture, mm-hmm. I don't necessarily have any idea mm-hmm. of what it's going to be
yeah.
when I start yeah. to do it. Mm-hmm. So how do you work? Do you already know exactly what you're going to build before you build it?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you just start holding the materials and something kind of comes to you?
It can be both. In the beginning, I feel like a lot of it was because I was working with so many salvage materials. It was like, what is this and this? If you look at it all together, what can this create? So it was almost like putting together a puzzle. I find now I kind of tend to want to veer off in, you know, an object. Like I want to make a lamp or I want to make a bench or something. And then that kind of, it goes from there. You know, but it and this is a little bit of a side thing, so I'll get back to it. But it's interesting that becoming an entrepreneur in a field that I started because it was artistic and creative has brought some of the biggest challenges for me, because it dumbing down the work is not the right word, but it dulls it. Because what you'll do is you'll build something that's creative that comes in a very flowing way to you, but now you sell that piece and someone buys another one. And now all of a sudden you have to start replicating exactly the same thing over and over and over and again. And now it's not, I mean, it's still art, but it's kind of not, you know? And so...
So do you prefer to do one-of-a-kind, unique items then each time, or...?
You know, it's kind of a mix. I mean, you know, when you're starting off, I think that sometimes that's a luxury you can't have, you know? And or sometimes a lot of... a designer will come to you and say, I want this, and they're very specific about what they want, where sometimes it'll be more of a collaboration. I mean, ultimately, I think probably the goal would be, you know, to start getting a bit of a workforce and having my line created by some other people, and then I continue to make prototypes and the first pieces and jump in when it's needed. And that's also has been a huge challenge, that idea of like, well, no, if people are buying one of my pieces, they like my story and they need my hands in it. And so to let go of that a little bit and realize that, no, if someone's replicating your work, it's still yours and it's mm-hmm. your design and all of that. But I find that a lot of times when I actually sit down to create something just for the sake of creating it, it's usually a nighttime or a weekend, and it's usually based with whatever's on hand. and, you know, maybe something that I need for my house. A lot, I get a lot of inspiration from, you know, magazines or influences and things like that. So there'll be something in the back of my head. And I really like doing things that may be more traditional or things that already exist, but switching it up a little bit. So doing different patterns that are typically done in wood out of metal, you know, or things that are, you know, I'm really obsessed in trying to perfect this idea of, you know, a Bottega Veneta bag with a woven leather. I want to do that in steel and make a coffee table of it and trying to do things like that, you know, so kind of doing a little bit of a twist on things too. So
we have a caller.
Oh,
hi.
Oh, we do.
Welcome.
Oh.
Who are you?
Hi, thank you. My name is Keely.
Hi.
Hi. So I had a question for Megan.
Hi
there. I just kind of wanted to ask you, a lot of times you hear of artists kind of struggling and balancing kind of the business aspect, kind of the entrepreneurial elements of your business with the artistic aspects. And sometimes, you know, the brain doesn't always work totally in balancing both of those elements. So do you struggle in deciding how to allocate your time towards furthering the business end of your business with marketing, promotion, even accounting and all of that versus working on kind of the artistic elements, or does it kind of work itself out naturally, or is that something you deal with?
Yeah, no, that's the stuff that keeps me awake. Yeah, no, it's real hard. No, it definitely is. And I find my tendency sometimes is to I'll find periods of time where I've become very, very invested in the more practical things, like you said, like accounting and stuff like that. I mean, that's not to say my accounting skills are still, but you know, some of the more kind of practical business aspects of it. And what the thing that was able to like kind of flip the switch for me was I'd realize there'd be times when I would find myself in the shop building something that was, it wouldn't necessarily say for me or for my house, but something that was not necessity. No one had ordered it, and it was just something I wanted to create. I would feel so guilty. I'd just be like, there's so many other things that I could be doing. But then what I realized was how I felt after I'd created that piece, and how that would bring you full circle and kind of refresh you and be like, oh, that's why I got into it to begin with, and realizing how important that was, and then taking a step forward and realizing that's work, actually. Like, that's work. If the next day I work better because I did that, rather than, you know, answer 5 emails, that's work, and that's allocating my time well. So, I mean, yeah, it's still a balance because you can go overboard in that direction too. But yeah, it's definitely a struggle. But honestly, like I feel like it's the best kind of problems to have, which is, you know, if I'm worried whether I should make a new piece of furniture or, you know, respond to a few emails or, you know, handle this invoice all because of a business that I built up from nothing because I decided to, you know, pick up a welding torch. Like, it's the best kind of problems to have. So, but yeah, it's definitely a struggle. So.
Well, thank you. That's, I loved your response. Did you have anything else to ask, Keely?
No, that was it.
All right. Well, thank you for calling
in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's great. That is something that people struggle with so much, is because if you're not out there marketing yourself, and of course there's a certain amount of word of mouth, and that your business will grow from the fact that people now know you and are purchasing your things and come back for more, mm-hmm. and refer you because they want someone else to have one of your original creative, mm-hmm. Fabulous pieces. Mm-hmm. But yet there is also that other side that you have to take care of on. And especially when you're first starting out, you're wearing all the hats, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And so how do you build your business and at the same time be able to do exactly what it is you love, which is that creative aspect of it too.
Right.
And I love that you said you took the time to, sometimes you'll take the time and create something just because this is why you got into it in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I do believe it makes you a better entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And will ultimately lead to more success because you've created this piece. The other thing too is that it shows your potential clients the scope of your artistic expression and all of the things that you can do. And if you're not creating these amazing kind of pieces then they don't really, they may not know. They don't know how to articulate always into words exactly what they want. Uh-huh. And yet they see something. I mean, that's what happened for me when I saw some of your things, your bookends, and I'm not even sure what we call the caddy.
Yeah. I guess they hold wine jar holders or something, but you use them obviously for your paintbrush.
Yeah, jar holders, but except I use them for paintbrushes.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have even known to say this is, articulate that this is something I want until I saw it right in front of me.
Yeah.
So thankfully you did create that for whatever reason you created it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's really fantastic. And that I think as an artist, to even sustain yourself, you have to create the things that you love too.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise it just becomes robotic and we get into this business. You know your why. And that's important. You know your why. Why you got into why I got into the business in the first place is mm-hmm. because you wanted to create something beautiful and mm-hmm. aesthetically, as well as practical and functional and all of those things. And so how awesome that you're doing that and able to do that and remembering that. And that is what keeps us going when the going gets tough, when the challenges are really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And if at some point that the practical side, the business side, the accounting, the all of those things start to come into play,
mm-hmm.
you know, the more successful you can get, then what I recommend to entrepreneurs is focus on your strengths and focus mm-hmm. on, you know, you doing your best work. Because if you're spending your time doing things that aren't motivating you, then it's going to kind of pull you down. So focus on your own genius.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So
there are many more people who are better at accounting than I. Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Yeah. No, so it's great that just organically you are recognizing all of these things within business to do. You know, that, okay, well, I think I'm going to be a better person. And if I can go and spend some of my time creating mm-hmm. still and that kind of thing. So that's really great. So what would you, if you had to do it all over again,
mm-hmm.
would you do anything differently?
No. I mean, I've got a long, long list of things that need to get done that are going to make my life easier and my business stronger. But no, probably not. Is that a boring answer? No, I mean, it's been a crazy adventure. It's been fun. So no, I don't think so. I really think that, and again, this has been my whole life. I think that, you know, I have kind of an unconventional childhood, and then this experience with my ex, all of this. I think that you make the only decisions you can make at the time. And so, no, I don't think I would.
Well, it certainly led you to being in a great place now with great team members, partners, you know, a collective group that mm-hmm. you all rely on each other and you help each other and you support each other and you encourage each other.
Yeah.
And probably even help market each other mm-hmm. as well. And I know, I believe you all have, you know, big plans of, I mean, you all are all of you are growing.
Yeah.
As well. And you have plans going forward to expand your business in different kind of ways. And some of your products will be more mainstream and out there still will have your name on it, whether you physically put the torch to that particular edge or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it is your design. And I think that's really awesome and great.
Mm-hmm.
But what is the biggest challenge that you face? I mean, for entrepreneurs, especially, it is your own company, even though you're working with other people. There's no one saying you have to show up at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And if, you know, necessarily telling you what to do. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe your clients do by saying, I need this by a certain date. But mm-hmm. but how do you motivate yourself? How do you keep
going? I mean, I think the biggest motivator is just having gotten into a profession that I love. That, like, in my downtime, what I find myself doing is kind of technically work anyway. You know, I laugh, like, my friend Kara, we go out, she's an architect, and we'll go out and we're like the biggest nerds at restaurants because we're literally sit down and, like, you know, we go to a bar to be social and you sit down and we end up, like, looking at, you know, the trim here or these fixtures. And so I think the biggest motivator is just finding something that you love to do, because then you do it all the time and you're always kind of furthering and enhancing what you're doing. But then a lot of times it's just work too. I mean, just...
Because you still have to...
You got
to
get up.
It's like you still have to do the laundry.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right? I mean, I do think, you know, it's very fortunate that I feel like the community I have in my life right now has very similar interests. And so, you know, the things that would normally separate work from your social life or your personal life very much merge together for me now, which is a great thing. So I feel like I can still find that balance while still being immersed in work. But, like, it takes over your life. It really does. It completely takes over your life. And I feel like if you, I don't know. I don't know if there are people out there that it's easier for them and they just can kind of manage that and do this 9 to 5 and then go about their lives. I don't think so. I haven't found them yet. But
no,
you have to
either.
Understand. Yeah, it's going to take over your life. And you find ways within that to still have a life. But you just have to... And I don't like the idea that, like, you have to be willing to do that, because I don't think you should do things you don't want to do. I mean, not that every day going to the shop is always, some days I'm like, all right, I really don't want to put this, you know, piece of furniture together. But, yeah, I think, sorry, I'm losing my train of thought.
No, well, but, we were just talking how you motivate yourself. And,
yeah.
and I think that's so true, mm-hmm. to be passionate about what you're doing, because that's what entrepreneurs don't have 9 to 5 jobs.
Yeah.
They should go get a job if that's really what they're looking for, because it's hard to be a true entrepreneur and you know, kind of just make it a hobby.
Right.
So
yeah.
this is your life, and mm-hmm. and it's, you're doing what you want to do, and if it ever becomes that, mm-hmm. then it's time to go.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, exactly.
Right. If you can't find the love in it anymore.
Yeah. Know? Well, exactly. I feel like I've spent way too much time and too much work to do something to make myself happy, that if within that I like somehow ruin it and it becomes not that anymore, then yeah, it's not worth it. Or, you know, I just need to reallocate my headspace a little bit.
But, yeah. I was going to say, or you need to reconfigure it or see what you need to do to mix it up a bit so that you can still be in love with your business.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, if you find one thing taking over too much, then that's the time to reevaluate and say, okay, how can I move this? Mm-hmm. What did I love about my business in the first place?
Right.
And so that is really critical to kind of go back to your roots. I think.
Yeah, exactly.
And find out what was it that I was loving. And you actually said that earlier in our conversation, you know, where you went and made a piece and you said, well, this is why I got into it in the first place. And just tapping into that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important. What's the biggest challenge that you face as being an entrepreneur?
I mean, personally, it is because I'm wearing so many hats. There are just some that I'm not good at. And, you know, just in terms of running a business, there are certain things, like I feel like the marketing aspect of it, you know, photographing my pieces, designing that part of it, I'm very good at. The business part of it, the things that come down to just numbers and, you know, finding out how to quote your pieces and invoices and all of that has definitely been a struggle. And I really think it's just taking a product that is creative and actually being able to strip the emotion away from it and look at it as a product, because I think sometimes you have to. And that's not always the part that I enjoy. But, you know, it's the same, it's the question that Keely asked her, finding that balance of artistic and not, and being responsible with both of them, because they're both so important and equal measures. And yeah, I think that's definitely it.
Well, recognizing that is critical, mm-hmm. and knowing that. So whenever you do start to become too bogged down in those things that are not part of your strengths and are not appealing, recognizing that and saying, okay, if I get too consumed with this, it's going to take away from mm-hmm. what I love about my business. And mm-hmm. so how can I allocate this? How can I give myself more time to do the things that I'm best at, which is creating?
Right.
And that's you. That's not mm-hmm. something that you're going to have all these other people coming in and doing that mm-hmm. they can do, because mm-hmm. you are the face of your business and you are the creator of most of all the things that you're doing.
Right.
And you find inspiration in a bunch of different areas. So you being able to focus on that is really critical.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. And as you said earlier, asking for help, that's a hard thing. It's a hard thing. So realizing when you should be asking for help and when you shouldn't, because I think that's important too.
Right.
And in doing that, I think it's the more responsible thing to do sometimes. And it's the same thing. It's allocating is what you're saying too. Yeah.
So was there a point in time when you first started out,
mm-hmm.
Was there a point in time where you owned it, where you said, I'm an entrepreneur.
Mm.
I'm a welder. I'm an entrepreneur versus I'm learning how to do this. And people have kind of bought a few of my things.
Yeah. But no, I mean, I think, I mean, one, just being able to party, be like, when someone's like, what do you do? And they expect, you know, oh, you're a struggling actress, to be like, no, I'm actually a welder. I got help just because it was fun. But no, I definitely, there was definitely a moment when I owned it, and it was in my old shop. And what I realized was, and it was, it came out of a mistake, which is metal is obviously something that's very rigid. And as you said, I would never thought to weld. People typically think of metal and steel as a very like hard masculine thing. And it was really interesting to me because what I'd done was, you know, I'd tried to make a right angle of something, which is always, you know, interesting because you think you put two pieces of metal together and you weld it together, and now you have a right angle. But to recognize that when you add heat to it, how it makes everything so fluid. And so it's very hard to keep angles, and you have to, anyway, now I've learned how to go about that. But to recognize that there was so much femininity in this masculine material that I'd chosen, and to be able to take something that is so hard and watch it become so fluid, and literally you can make a cut, you can weld it together, you can grind it down, and you will never be able to tell where one piece started and one stopped, and you literally have made something new. And, you know, I do a lot of times in some of the pieces that I'm doing where some of the weld is more decorative than structural, you know, obviously there, you know, if it's a large table, there are welds that are structural, but then there's some on the outside, which I just choose to continue, is I'll actually take some people call it stitch welding, or some people call it tack welding, and I've had a lot of people yell at me for it, but it's something that I've started to do, and it's, I feel like it's kind of become my signature, which is like small little welds. And to me, it's like to find that expression in there, because again, it's not structural. This thing's not falling apart. It's fine. But, and not to get too, you know, grandiose about it, but the idea that there's many different types of paintings. And I realized that I was kind of creating a weld. This might get into like Nerdville, but like I was creating a weld that looked like some of these guys' welds, which were a very long piece, but I was doing it with really individual strokes. And it kind of came to mind, again, I'm not comparing myself to an impressionistic painter or anything, but the idea that really little pieces can make up a bigger whole, and visually seeing that. And so I guess realizing that I had something in this craft, which is a very old craft and very male dominated, that was individually my own and might actually become a demand, was something that I was like, oh, okay.
I love it. Yeah. And did you, so you owned, is that, that's the moment you owned being a welder,
yeah,
and also owned being an entrepreneur too?
I think so. I think it was like, I think that this is of value. I think I'm doing something that someone else isn't doing, which certainly became a struggle because after you get over the novelty that it's a girl welding, there's lots of welders out there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that was definitely the time when, and it was all around the same time that I was like, I love the way this smells. And like all of a sudden like burning metal started to smell good, and like gasoline and all these fumes. And yeah, it just sank in, and it was like, okay, this is my life now.
Yeah. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. Awesome. So what would be your, you know what I want to ask you before, yeah, let make sure we have enough time. Were there naysayers? People who said,
yeah,
you can't do this?
Oh, of course. There's still people who say that. Yeah, absolutely.
Really? Still?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. What am I doing? Like, I'm a girl trying to like I keep making my goal, I'm going to stop building things that are bigger than myself, because I literally keep building these things that once they're built, like I can't but ask for help to move them or install them or something. No, I mean, it's completely ridiculous. I mean, I've got anything from people who are like, is it the best time to start a business right now? Like, don't you want to get like married and have kids? And then to other people who have critiques on, you know, entering a world that is already very saturated, you know, like, well, you're making furniture. Lots of people make furniture, you know, or you're doing it downtown LA. A lot of people are doing that now. And so, yeah, absolutely. But honestly, it's the funnest part ever to be able to just be like, I don't know. I feel like that's been a big thing in my life as I've gotten older, and that's been of a lot of value, to be able to not take it personally when people do that. I think there's some value. Sometimes you can extract things from that. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, anytime you're doing something kind of extreme, I think there's going to be a whole lot of opinions about it. Yeah.
Well, I think that we always talk about in entrepreneurship, you know, about having something unique. So your mm-hmm. story is unique, and that may be what at first attracts people to you that you have this unique story. Mm-hmm. But you also have this unique brand and this unique line of accessories and furniture that I've not seen anywhere else. So, you know, that's really why people are coming to you. Yes, are there a lot of welders? There's a lot of everything. And so when that's true, you have to stand out in a unique way. And, you know, your story might first attract them, but the products that you create are what continues to keep them coming back and makes them buy, because they're not just buying your story. I mean, they do. We all want to do business with people that that we like and we think we know and that we think we trust, you know, but and we're fascinated by your story. I mean, I was obviously fascinated by your story when I first heard about it, but I also really happen to love your products too. And I think that's got to be true for most of your customers. And that's what entrepreneurs need to think about too. And I love that you ignored the naysayers.
Yeah. I don't know what else you can do with them, really.
Well, a lot of people buy into it. You know, they say, oh, well, they said I can't do it. And so I guess I can't, or maybe this isn't so smart. But I love that you had that determination and that fortitude and that passion for doing what you were doing. And you had already experienced and felt the thrill of holding that torch in your hand and and creating something beautiful and amazing and something that you loved and have a great aesthetic and knowing that and predicting that others would love it as well. So that's great. Is there anything that you do to unplug, unwind, or do you need to?
I mean, I definitely find that going into the shop and just like creating something is a good way to do it. But I'm a big reader too. So no, I read a lot. And I do try and make a point of connecting with some sort of world that is bigger than my own at some point. And usually just that's been my habit in my life, is it usually comes from books or something. So that tends to be what I do. And I drink a lot of whiskey.
That's great. That'll work too, right?
Yeah.
and also help you unwind. So what is your very best business lesson, tip, whatever, and how did you come that you'd like to share? And how did you come about deciding that this was your best business lesson?
I would like for it to be something so much less like kind of new age and crystal than this is going to sound. But really, I think it's just understanding when something is right. And like, again, like when you say, oh, you don't listen to naysayers or something, I feel like I've just been able to tap into a certain thing when I know, like, gosh, that's the best way to describe it. And strangely enough, when I say I've been reading, I've kind of been trying to put my finger on this for a while, but I've been listening to a lot of TED Talks and all these things which talk about like inspiration and what that really feels like and how when it happens, you know it. And you know that's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And I think that comes in many different forms on the scale. And I think that like everyone at some point in their life has recognized it when they get hit by something that they think is a great idea and they follow through on it. But I think there's much more... There's subtleties in that. And so being able to, in many decisions, to sit back and say, is this right for me? Does this sit well with me? And being able to tap into that and answer it from something that, like, I think obviously critical thinking is invaluable. And I think you should list the pros and cons of everything. But what it all comes down to at some point, and I really wish I could come up with a better way of describing it, but understanding, like, what a gut feeling really is, and knowing how to answer that and not back away from it or not talk yourself out of it has been really, really important to me. Because I think that the things that are, and again, I'm a new business and I'm still in many ways struggling with some things, but I think that the things that I am doing well and that are holding their own are those things that resonated for me like that. And they were just things when I trusted my intuition and went on it. And just being able to kind of hold true to that. And so I guess I say that it's advice because I do think that there is some work involved in it, as I said, in being able to recognize what that feels like for yourself. And then the next step I feel like is being able to like call on that at will. Godspeed with that one, but you know.
The intuition and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Was there a moment that I have a friend who wrote a book, Epiphanies, and in fact, I'm going to be interviewing her this month, but was there like a moment that you said, this is what I really need to tap back into? if I trusted my gut on this one. Was there something that really led to you deciding that this was your biggest lesson?
Yeah, really quick. This is going to sound really cheesy, but okay. So I had been reading lots of self-help books on how to kind of get over my breakup and what to do. And they always kept talking about this idea of like an open heart. If you approach things with an open heart, good things come to you, you'll be successful. So I remember one day, like, oh, and again, like a lot of whiskey, and it was like, it was not a good day on my couch. And I was just so upset because my heart was broken. And having this moment when I realized that all I'd been doing was reading all these books, trying to figure out how to open my heart, and then sitting there saying, but my heart is so broken, and realizing, oh shit, that's the same thing. Like, you got exactly what you wanted now, and now you can do anything with it. And realizing that instead of feeling bad, I actually felt very taken care of. And I don't know. I don't know if that's an answer to your question or not, but it's that was kind of the moment that was like, oh, okay, I'm doing exactly what I should be doing.
Well, it works for me. I love trusting your intuition and your gut. I think more people need to do that. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
Thank you, Jan.
Listening to Megan of Whorehouse Studios. And we'll see you next week.